anything haunting your house?
Haunting my house?
I don't know. You've had like weird noises from your refrigerator and stuff. Is that still going on?
Yeah, my fridge still rings really, really loud.
Okay, that's fun.
So I've started just wearing earplugs whenever I'm downstairs. Yeah.
So was it like actually like more restful to go across the
waters? It was really nice to not have the sound of a refrigerator ringing everywhere that I went.
Sure.
Yeah.
But you can always pull up a cot in your office. I mean, half the people think we live here anyway.
Yeah.
So you can just live in
it. I already have a foam couch. I can just sleep on that. Yeah.
Problem solved.
Yeah.
Well, welcome back to Beyond Sunday. This is Pastor David Bowser, and with me today is Pastor Cassandra Nagel.
Hello, people of the future.
How are you doing today?
I'm good.
Good.
How are you?
So I'm all right. Yeah. So we're down to two because Mr. Patrick is not feeling up to snuff today, and Elise is doing something with her pilot's license, a check ride or flight something suit. I don't know.
Yeah, she's like 98% there.
Yeah, but it's that last 2%. I mean, that's the part that gets you. So
I think she'll be fine.
I mean, I'm confident in her too. I'm just saying, it's the last 2% for a reason, right? They don't put the hardest 2% first. That's not how it goes. Anyway, I'm sure she'll do great, and so we'll wait for her to take us on our live Beyond Sunday plane ride, and we'll do an episode from the plane.
Oh, that'd be fun.
You won't be able to hear anything.
It'll just be. Oh, I was thinking it would just be you and Patrick screaming as Elise calmly flies.
I'm a pretty calm flyer. Would you freak out in a tiny plane?
No.
Yeah, I think I'd be fine. If she let Patrick fly, then I might be screaming.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Only in the case of emergency do I trust Patrick to have to land a plane. All right. So should we jump right in to our news story?
Yeah.
All right. So I've got a news story. This actually, you know, Patrick often gets his from like the New York Post or whatever, but this is a legit news story from the AP. That's the press of associations, as they say. Let me ask you this. Do you like the Olympics?
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. We're halfway there.
Great.
Do you like Florida Man stories?
Florida Man stories?
Are you familiar with Florida Man stories?
No.
Oh, okay. So previously we've talked about Florida Man stories on the podcast. And essentially it was a Twitter handle that started all this where they had a kind of fictional superhero named Florida Man, and they would pull out genuine headlines from Florida events and attribute it to Florida Man. So it'd be like, you know, Florida Man caught or Florida Man trapped wrestling a gator after riding his ATV into the, you know, whatever, right?
Oh. Like,
just completely ridiculous stuff that actually happened to people in Florida that would get attributed to Florida Man.
Okay.
So those are the alleged Florida Man stories. So someone had the brilliant idea to combine the Olympics and Florida Man stories and turned it into the Florida Man Games, in which 12 different teams competed in events based off of real events that happened to people, including getting chased by the police, wrestling alligators, having all sorts of eating competitions, and turned it into the Florida Man Games, which I find amazing. So this is James Gordon of DeLand, Florida, who's the winner of the first event. I've lived in Florida my whole life. They're calling these events. I'm just calling this Bleeping Tuesday Afternoon.
Oh, okay.
Which I think is awesome. So they had, they had all sorts of fun things. There was a relay race where you had to ride a bicycle while carrying a pair of other bicycles, copper pipes, and a catalytic converter, because you were like stealing these other things. You had to ride a bike while you were stealing these other things away. And another competitor said, I have absolute disregard for self-preservation. I will do anything. When I was in the military, I did a little alligator wrestling. That was apparently part of his military experience. They paid real money, $45 a ticket or more, to watch the games. One person drove 180 miles to come and watch these.
That's dedication.
We give, this is from the creator of the event, we give a person an opportunity to live a day in the life of Florida Man without ending up in a cop car. That was their that was their event. I thought this was pretty great.
Wow.
So if you had the desire to wrestle an alligator or do other silly things in the vein of Florida Man and compete in an Olympic event or Olympic adjacent event, I should say, then here you go. The Florida Man Games are for you. Maybe not your bag of tea, not your thing.
No, but
okay. Well, that's
it is pretty interesting. They really committed to the bit.
They did. They went all in. And I mean, to have 12 teams like doing this, that's no small feat.
Well, if it's just a regular Tuesday, then you probably could have had more than 12.
It's just Tuesday afternoon. Yeah. Who knew? All right. Well, we are not here to talk about Florida. or the Olympics, tragically. Though those are coming. I'm very excited about those. Yeah. Summer Olympics, always a good time. But we're here because you just recently returned from a trip to Bungoma, Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
And you were there kind of doing, I would say, some research for Lord of Life and partnering with another ministry that's taking place. And so we wanted to have a chance for you to share a little bit about your experience and maybe let our listeners hear about what's happening there with the King's Embrace, right? That's the name
of the King's Embrace.
The King's Embrace. So I'm going to just say, how did it come about that you went on this trip, and take it from there.
Yeah. So we have members here at Lord of Life, Amy Cherry and Macy Cherry. Mm-hmm. And when they were new members during the new member class, that was the first time I heard about the King's Embrace. Amy was sharing about how her parents had started this nonprofit. And then, that was a number of months ago. And word came about that Amy's parents, Linda and David, were planning a mission trip. And so we were trying to get a group from Lord of Life to go, but timing wasn't really ideal. I think it was happening in June, and June is a really busy month around here with other, with VBS and mission trips for the youth and things like that. So
hard to go to Alaska and Kenya in the same month. That's tricky.
Yeah, that's basically the whole month right there of travel. So, but it was still kind of nudging in my mind of like, this is a really interesting ministry. And so I reached out to Linda and David and said, hey, like, are there other trips that are coming up? And they said, we go over there 3 or 4 times a year. There's other trips that you can arrange. And Pastor Chris Lake, who is the pastor of Tree of Life in Conroe, sits on the board. And so I had seen his name listed in the
They're a partner Lutheran church just a little bit north of us.
And so with Chris being on the board, I gave him a call and I said, hey, can you tell me more about this nonprofit and what your relationship with this group looks like as a pastor, what it looks like for your congregation? And he said, he gave me the spiel and he said, well, I'm going in February with a couple people if you'd like to come along. And this was in maybe November or so. And I was like, as long as it's not too late, I'd be happy to come along. And so that's sort of when all the preparations started to take place. So it was quite the journey to get there. From Houston to Bungoma, we took
their
a flight.
Direct flight. You just go straight there?
Yeah. If Elise was my private, pilot, then maybe.
I don't think you want to fly.
I don't have a Taylor Swift private jet, so I had to fly as a normal civilian.
I don't think you want to fly Elise's little single-engine prop plane across the Atlantic.
I think we'd run out of gas before we finished crossing the Gulf.
We're getting a little close to Amelia Earhart here. I'm not sure that's what we're aiming for. Yeah.
So we flew from Houston to London. That was like a 9.5-hour flight.
All right.
We had a layover for a couple hours, then we flew from London to Nairobi.
Okay.
So that got us in Kenya.
Yeah.
But that Nairobi flight was another 9 hours or so.
Oof,
I left on Monday evening, and then I got to Nairobi Tuesday night at like 11:30 local time. Mm-hmm. So it was like a good, full day of travel. Yeah. And then we stayed in a hotel overnight, and before we had left Houston originally, we learned that our next flight from Nairobi to a smaller town called Kisumu had been canceled. Which we learn, Pastor Chris's phrase is nothing is easy in Kenya. And so you just learn that, being in a developing country, things are going to be different.
Yeah.
So the flight was canceled, and the other flight that was happening later in the day was already booked full. So we kind of had an extra day in Nairobi to just hang out, spent another night in the hotel, and then flew the next morning to Kisumu. So it was actually really nice. We got to sleep, and we did a little safari early in the morning on Wednesday, and got to see some animals and kind of have like a little kind of African safari experience and get adjusted to the time zone. So that was nice.
What was your favorite animal that you got to see?
I got to see rhinos, which was really exciting. Yeah. My family had been on safari back in 2012, and rhinos was one of the animals that we didn't see. And so I was in my mind, I wasn't telling anybody, but that was like the animal I really wanted to see. And it was the first animal on the safari. And it was a mom and a baby.
Aww.
And it was just, but of course the mom and the baby are like the size of cars. I mean, they're huge. Yeah. So they're
the
cute,
baby
but they're also
a slug bug, and the mom is a tank.
Yeah. So they're cute from a distance, right? But
how close were you to the animals?
We drove right past them, which was really cool. And then we saw a female lion, a lioness, and she walked right past our Jeep or whatever you call it, the vehicle.
Vehicle, yeah.
And I mean, as happens in a lot of kind of wildlife sanctuaries or national parks or safari areas, is the animals don't really care about you.
Yeah.
And they're pretty used to people. So
you're not food.
You might feel anxious about it, but they do not care. If you get out of the vehicle, you're automatically food. But as long as you're in the...
I know I can't eat you in that thing. So,
but for the most part, you're safe. So so that was our...
It's affirming.
So that was our... I guess that was day three for me.
Yeah.
And so then, Thursday morning, we got back to the airport and we flew from Nairobi to Kisumu. It was only like an hour flight.
The point of the trip was not a safari.
The trip was not a... We only did the safari because we had a bonus day, right? And so we had extra time to kill. So we flew to Kisumu, which was an hour. And then Linda and David Fisher and some of their staff picked us up from the airport.
Okay.
And we rode in a van for 2.5 hours from the airport in Kisumu to... the King's Embrace.
Let me ask you a question just really quick. You said it's about an hour long flight. Now, for us, an hour long flight would get us from like here to Dallas, roughly. It's probably a little bit shorter than that to Dallas, but you know, you can drive from here to Dallas in 4 hours.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it would not be a 4 hour drive to get from where you were to Kisumu. So, what would it, would it have even been possible to drive where you were going?
It would have been possible to drive.
Okay.
What I learned in Kenya, I didn't see a single speed limit sign.
Oh.
Anywhere.
That sounds like fun.
But the way that the speed is monitored is there are speed bumps all the time.
Okay.
All the time. And so we did see a number of large trucks that will travel from the coast where they've picked up all sorts of products from India, from parts of Asia, and then drive them in trucks all the way through Kenya and get to Uganda, right into the landlocked countries. So it absolutely is possible to make the journey by vehicle, but it takes hours. Right? So, so the 45-minute hour, flight experience saved us
much more time
than driving 65 up to Dallas, right?
Yeah. Imagine driving to Dallas and hitting speed bumps.
So I don't remember the exact distance from Kisumu to the King's Embrace. And if I did, it would have been in kilometers anyway. So
we could have done the conversion, but that's all right.
You can imagine 2.5 hours of driving, is not the same in Kenya as it is. You're not going as fast and you're constantly slowing down and speeding up due to the speed bumps, due to passing motorcycles. They call them motorbikes, but they're all over the place and things like that. So,
So very different experience of driving for this 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
So you have been traveling now for 3 days plus a safari. You've driven 2.5 hours from the airport. You've met the owners, operators of
the founders.
Founders,
yeah.
Thank you. That's better.
The executive directors. Yeah.
And now you're at the King's Embrace.
Yeah. So we arrive at the King's Embrace and it's sort of, I think Linda at one point described it as like, we didn't want it to be kind of like a Taj Mahal in the middle of like a rural area. But when you think about kind of like any, person coming from a developed country who has a significant amount of money, right? Mm-hmm. Being able to build a complete structure looks like a palace in comparison to, I mean, when I was staying in my dormitory, I looked out my window and there were the property that was next to me, there was this little like house that was made out of mud. I mean, like most of the homes are made out of mud and there's no glass on the windows. I mean, it's just, to see the stark difference in the facility and to know at the same time, like that they're very conscious of that too. Right. And not wanting to, it still meets a lot of kind of
you're not living
the
it up
standards
in
of Kenya
in a Ritz-Carlton situation,
right?
Like, I mean, if you
there's no AC. I mean, there's still many ways in which it's
if you plop that sucker down in the woodlands, no one here would feel like it was a palace.
Correct.
But by comparison, it's a very different experience.
Yeah. So, so we get in and the van pulls in, and immediately there's like four boys that are greeting us okay. at the door. And what we learned from the get-go is like sometimes that there will be boys who aren't going to school because they either got malaria. And when you have malaria, you have to stay home for 3 days, I think, for the vaccination process to be completed. And also sometimes you go to school in the morning and they say, actually, we're not having class for your grade today because the teachers had to go to a conference and then you have to walk back home. And so, you know, we show up right before dinner time and we're like, oh, you know, well, not me, but some of the staff say, oh, you know, these boys are home today for XYZ reasons. So already you're starting to get this understanding of the way that planning and communications sure. and the school system particularly might yeah. be different.
So let me back up just for a moment. So yeah. you arrived at the King's Embrace and these boys are greeting you.
Mm-hmm.
What are the boys doing there? What's the King's Embrace's mission? Like what sure. What purpose does it serve?
Yeah. So the King's Embrace, I wouldn't call it an orphanage because most of the children who live at the King's Embrace have family okay. members.
All right.
But the King's Embrace is a nonprofit, a community where former street boys can live. They receive lodging, they get meals, they get clothes. They're given uniforms and are able to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
And uniforms essentially
are required for school?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, even in the public schools.
Sure, yeah.
And essentially are receiving 24/7 care from the staff of the King's Embrace.
Okay.
And so for these boys, it's their home. The King's mm-hmm. Embrace is their mm-hmm. physical home. And right now there are 53 boys that are living there on site. So they are like a community altogether. So when I got there, I explained to Linda and David, I said, I kind of thought it would be like Hogwarts. And, you know, I think about, you know, in Harry Potter, you know, the children come here for the school year and they have sure. uniforms yeah. and they eat in a dining hall together. And some of those, like, you know, cinematic images are what's happening, right?
Sure. They staircases do eat meals are moving
together
and all
and things
yeah.
like that. And they have families outside of, kind of outside mm-hmm. of the community as well. But there are other ways that it's different too.
Sure.
So, yeah. So that is.
So they're there to serve these boys. That's what King's mm-hmm. Embrace exists as.
Yeah.
These boys mostly have families though.
Mm-hmm.
So what draws the boys to the King's Embrace as opposed to staying with their families?
Yeah. So throughout Kenya, there is a problem, a situation with a demographic called what they call street boys.
Okay.
And so a street boy would be a child, a male who has either been kicked out of their home or has left their home on purpose due to physical abuse, emotional abuse. They might not be getting enough to eat. And oftentimes, especially for families with multiple children, if they don't have enough mouths to feed, the girls are kept at home because there's an awareness that girls on the street will be trafficked and all sorts of horrible things.
They don't have enough to feed the mouths that they have. So
correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. And
I just
want
to make sure I understood you.
Yeah. Yeah. So when it comes down to, you know, we have five kids and we can only feed two,
mm-hmm.
we're going to keep the girls and the boys are on their own.
Okay.
And so these boys are either leaving on their own by their own choice or are kicked out and are forced to live on the streets,
yeah.
hence the name street boys.
Yeah.
And their reception by the wider community, I would say, is fairly mixed. Some shop owners are fairly tolerant of the street boys, and the boys often they beg, right?
Yeah, sure.
And do their best to sort of bargain and get some spending money so that they can buy food or glue, which I'll touch on in a little bit, but. So for these boys, they used to collect scrap metal. That was sort of the their basic kind of bargaining item.
Yeah.
And so they would sell scrap metal to local shop owners, and the shop owners would give them some Kenyan shillings, and then they could use that money to buy food. During COVID, there were some changes in government legislation that banned the selling of scrap metal, which really, I mean, devastated
yeah.
this like economic system
yeah,
for these
sure.
for these homeless boys. And so now they actually collect mostly plastics.
Okay.
And that sort of has replaced the scrap metal industry, if you will. For these boys, if they're not getting enough to eat, sometimes instead of buying food, they will buy from local shoemakers glue, which Linda and David kind of describe as like PVC glue. I mean, it has this very strong smell.
Yeah, if you're using it on shoes, it's not Elmer's.
Right.
Yeah,
this is not your kids' craft, so shoemakers are the only people in the community who have access to this glue. And so they will sell the excess glue to the street boys. And it's very addictive for the boys because it helps keep them warm when it's cold at night, and it helps quell their hunger pains, right? I mean, if you think about it, they're getting high off
smell. They're huffing the glue.
Yeah, they're huffing the glue. And so they have plastic bottles, you know, soda bottles or whatever it might be, with the glue in the bottom, and then they'll have like wooden sticks that they've just picked up from the ground. Then they stir the glue, and that activates the fumes, and then they smell through the bottle end. So most of the street boys are addicted to, in some capacity, to the glue, because that's what keeps them, that's what quells the pain, right, of hunger. And so Linda and David, when they had originally traveled to Kenya to visit another nonprofit that they had been financially supporting. And they thought, well, if we're supporting an organization, we might as well go see what it's all about. Yeah. And they witnessed, you know, the situation with the street boys that happens throughout Kenya, and were so disturbed, right, by the situation with boys as young as like 5 years old. I mean, young boys all the way up through boys who are now late teenagers or young adults and are just completely addicted to the glue, right? Like are no longer even desiring to eat food, right? Because they would rather spend that money on the glue. And so that's sort of the foundation of how the King's Embrace really began, was wanting to target this community of street boys. So the King's Embrace focuses on boys ages 18 and under, you know, like catching them when they're most vulnerable, and trying to stop that cycle of getting addicted to the glue, right?
So you've got a set of boys who are no longer in their homes. You know where their family is, but their family, for one reason or another, won't or can't support them. And so they're left on their own in the streets. And so the King's Embrace is kind of there to step in and try to care for them at some level. So how does that work? Like, are these enrolled, is maybe not the right word, but like, you know, they have a roster of like, here are the 50 boys who are staying here right now? Or is it like, well, we see 20 today and we'll see 30 tomorrow? Like, what's the kind of process on a day-to-day basis?
What's interesting is that a lot of these boys either don't have birth certificates, or it might be hard to find birth certificates, right? So George and a different David, who are both Kenyan nationals who are on staff at the King's Embrace, do a lot of kind of that administrative work to help find who these boys' families are, to get answers, to figure out what their home situation is. Linda and David shared about an experience where they were working with one particular street boy that had shown some signs of wanting to get out of the system he was in. They ended up reconnecting him with his family, and the family said, thank you so much. We didn't know what happened to him, right? Wow. And we're so glad to be reunited. Unfortunately, that is not the typical story. The King's Embrace within Bungoma Town itself, because Bungoma is the name of a town and the whole county, so it's kind of confusing. But within the town, they have what's called a drop-in center, and it's a place where the street boys can come anytime to receive a safe place to sleep. They can get food, and a lot of them go there to receive medical care because they've either been physically abused by the police or injured crossing the street because they got hit by a vehicle or a motorbike or things like that. And so that drop-in center has become kind of a first screening, if you will, to see, like, are these boys, you know, desiring something else, right? So it's not so much like there's not a van driving around town that's picking up boys and dropping them in the King's Embrace and just forcing them right, to be there. So there's some agency
the boy has
both
to
ways
to be part of this.
Which can be really heart-wrenching sometimes when sometimes the boys are so addicted that they don't choose that. So there's a process, kind of like a foster process, that takes 3 months, which is one school term in Kenya. So the They run kind of on like quarters, I guess I would say, mm-hmm. In Kenya for the school system. And so if there's a child, if there's a street boy that would like to become part of the King's Embrace, they're placed into foster care, either with another relative, maybe it's an aunt or an uncle, grandparent, or in some cases with a non-related person, okay. non-family person. That foster caregiver is given oil and rice. They're not given money because sure. you don't know how they'll spend the money, but right. they're given oil and rice kind of as a commitment from the King's Embrace to say, you need to properly house this child. You need mm-hmm. to feed this child. And so if you can make sure that, you know, this boy, you know, is safe, has a place to sleep and goes to school consistently, yeah. we will continue to provide you with rice and oil. Yeah. And then our staff come in and they do the kind of checks mm-hmm. along the way mm-hmm. of, is this family, you know, meeting sure. the yeah. needs of this yeah, boy? Yeah. So that happens for about 6 weeks or so. And okay. then when midterm break comes along, the boys in the foster care program are able to go to the King's Embrace just for a long weekend. Mm-hmm. And that's where they're able to meet the boys and see the facility. And, it sounds like that sort of becomes really that's really when the motivating factor comes in of like, I see what my life can be like. Yeah. If I, you know, stay strong and don't huff glue for the next, yeah. you know, 6 weeks.
So you mentioned the drop-in center is in Bungoma Town. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing kind of like a city center area. I mean,
yeah.
city
yeah,
might
the most
be too strong,
developed area. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And the King's Embrace is kind of on the outskirts? Or?
So the King's Embrace, I don't remember the name of the specific
That's fine.
town,
We're
if you will,
it
but it's
yeah.
probably a 25-minute drive okay. with speed bumps. So it's in a very rural area.
It's removed from mm-hmm. the kind of city center area.
Yeah. So there are some boys who are in high school at the King's Embrace, and they're driven in one of the vans into Bungoma Town to attend high school there. Okay. But all of the young boys who are in primary school, so kindergarten through eighth grade,
yeah.
Walk about 10 minutes
okay.
to a local primary school.
Okay.
And that was one of the goals for Linda and David, was wanting to find a place where they had access to water, they could get clear
sure.
Legal rights to mm-hmm. property, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of tribal and mm-hmm. familial claims yeah. to land, and they wanted to be within walking distance to a school
yeah.
because
yeah.
I think they have 27 boys in primary school.
Wow.
So
okay.
that's like a full school bus, right? If yeah. you think about it. But a lot of these rural schools don't even have kind of school bus routes yeah. in the same way that yeah. we might have here in the States. Yeah, so that foster process is about 3 months. And then once, you know, if all the boxes have been checked and the boys are not having glue and they were attending school and, you know, passing their classes, then they're able to make that transition from whatever their foster care situation was to living full time at the King's Embrace.
Wow.
And then the boys are there throughout their education, you know, throughout high school. Some of the boys in high school actually left the King's Embrace, if you will. They're living at a boarding school.
Okay.
So they're still part of the community and come there for holidays mm-hmm. or for visits on long weekends, but live full time at boarding schools. Mm-hmm. It all kind of depends on different test scores and things
sure.
that you get. And then once you graduate high school, the King's Embrace provides financial support for the boys to begin their either university studies or the first year of work in like a technical college or things like that.
Yeah.
So, and that's about kind of where the age range ends right
mm-hmm,
now.
Mm-hmm.
So the King's Embrace started in 2016. So some of those first groups of boys that are just now aging, kind of aging out of the program are
yeah.
approaching that. So
okay.
it's a little bit of uncharted territory, right? Figuring out what yeah. does it mean for some of these older boys as they're moving, you know, through the program.
Yeah, so the King's Embrace is relatively young as an organization
mm-hmm.
in that case. How long
yeah.
has it been around?
It was established in 2016.
Okay. Oh,
yeah.
So very
and then
young, yeah.
I think they moved into the facility, maybe 2019. I don't remember.
Okay.
Takes a
okay.
while for things to be constructed.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. It's not an easy process. Nothing
yeah.
is easy in Kenya, as we
Nothing
heard.
Is
yeah.
easy
yeah.
in Kenya, as Pastor Chris says. Yeah.
So let me ask this question. You know, if you have a boy who's coming and they're being housed at the King's Embrace and the King's
mm-hmm.
Embrace is feeding them, and is public education free or is the King's Embrace paying for their education?
So that's a good question. Public education is free,
uh-huh.
But the families, you know, the caregivers receive requests for various fees basically
sure.
throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, the joke is really that education's not free, but yeah, you don't have to pay tuition
to enroll. Yeah, to enroll, you have to buy a uniform, and you have to pay.
You have to buy a uniform, yeah. And then you have to, you know, pay a fee for a certain workbook 3 weeks in or things like that.
Okay, so in a given year, do you have an estimate of like what's a cost for the King's Embrace to have kind of one boy there for a year? I'm sure it fluctuates.
Oh gosh, I didn't ask, so I don't know off the top of my head.
I'm just thinking that. Even just to feed a boy for a year. I mean, I remember, I don't know if this is still right or not, but I remember those commercials from being in elementary school with UNESCO or whatever it was like. And it was like, just $1 a day can feed a child. And, you know, I don't know if it was Bungoma, Kenya, but it was, you know, somewhere.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking, even if we round up for inflation, let's call it $3 a day to eat. I mean, that's no small chunk of change, right? Yeah. I mean, that's like just feeding a kid for a year can be close to $900,000 probably. And so this is a significant investment on part of the King's Embrace. Yeah. How are they achieving that goal? I mean, I don't assume they sit on some sort of oil property where they're just like raking in the money and using it for this great benevolent purpose, right? Yeah. I assume something else is. So where's their,
that's a really great question. So first of all, let's talk about the food. The King's Embrace has a lot of acreage, and so they actually have a farm.
Oh, wow.
And so a lot of their property is just planted for maize. So they just grow corn upon corn upon corn, and they take it, they harvest it and take it into town, and it's ground up. And so they use this ground corn to make ugali, which is a kind of cornmeal based paste. I don't know. Yeah. It's maybe
porridge, maybe.
Porridge, yeah. It's kind of. It's thicker maybe than a porridge, but it almost can be cut in like cake, cake shapes, you know, like rice cakes, except it's cornmeal. It's warm. Yeah.
It reminds me of like I mean, it's probably not this, but like a polenta or something like where you can kind of have that cornmeal taste and you get it.
I was not personally a fan of it, but I mean,
but if it's that, it's very common. Not eating.
Yeah.
Any,
And so, so ugali, and then they grow kale, and they've got all sorts of fruit trees and things like that. So, and beans. And so actually, when you're growing a lot of your own food, you're able to, you know, minimize some of those costs. And the whole time I was there, I had meat twice. I was there about a week.
Okay.
So we had a stew one day, and all the boys got two kind of chunks of meat, like the size of a half dollar, maybe.
Yeah. It's like 1 ounce chunks. Probably. Yeah.
And then, Ronnie, one of the trip leaders, who's a chef, she had purchased, ground, beef, packets of ground beef, and made spaghetti and meat sauce for the boys. That was her kind of contribution. And so that was kind of a special occasion. But for the most part, they don't eat protein too. And so
Or at least not in the form of meat. They don't eat protein.
Right. So the protein's coming in the beans and other kinds of...
they're getting complete balanced diets. It's just mostly vegetarian. So what kind of... Like you said ground beef for the sauce. Was it lamb? Or like what were they eating when the
I didn't ask.
Better not
I think
to ask
it was. Him. I think it was goat. So they have a number of goats on the farm. They have a number of chickens.
Okay.
A lot of cows cross the roads in Kenya. So beef is certainly
available,
part of their availability. But it's meat. You know, like red meat or things like that is certainly a special occasion. There's these little itty bitty fish sometimes that they'll dry out or cook and eat as well. And then
kind of similar to like a sardine kind of thing, or
smaller, like little fish. And then what I learned on one of my very last days, it was rainy and all of these termites came out and started flying, you know, and they almost are like moths, and they flocked the lights. And Linda showed me a video early in one morning when a bunch of boys had taken like big, think of like Home Depot size buckets, big buckets, and we're filling them with live termites.
Okay.
And the boys would put a topping that they would put on their lunch and dinner and things like that. Because it's another source of protein.
It's probably a little crunch.
Yeah. And so Ronnie, the chef, ate multiple in front of me, and she's like, "It's not that bad." And I said, "Ronnie, I'm not that brave of an
eater. I trust you." Yeah.
So yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah. So it was a very interesting, diet. I mean,
So do the boys work the farm, or how is the...
So, there's a guy named John who is in charge of the farm. So he kind of oversees everything, but then all of the boys who live on site have different chores.
Sure.
And so some of the boys help collect eggs from the chickens and, clean the pens. They have a burn pit. So some of the boys take the garbage and burn it in the burn pit, or help with I think all of the boys help with harvesting because it's such a big undertaking. Some of the younger boys will do dishes and things like that, or they mop the floors. They, you know, have to clean the dormitory. So
everybody has
a role. Everybody has a role. Yeah. And I asked, how do you keep track of who does what? And they said, you know, David and George are you know, our leaders here. They have a list and they have a sheet, and you get a job, and sometimes those jobs rotate depending on, you know, what your team is doing. But
you're not mopping the floor for the next 18 years.
Yeah.
I gotcha. So you mentioned 27 boys in primary school.
Uh-huh.
How many other boys in like that high school range?
26.
Okay. So we're looking at like 50 plus.
Yeah. So
boys.
There's 53 boys who live on site. And then I believe there's another 10 that are in high school, and then 8 that are in post-secondary school. So I think the total 71 is, if I did my math right, on Facebook a couple of days ago.
That's fine.
So,
I'm not checking your math. Yeah.
So what's really interesting is that this number is almost double what it was in October.
Wow.
Because in November, the King's Embrace merged, if you will, or I would say absorbed about 25, 30 boys from another nonprofit. And that's where kind of the drop-in center came from as well. So the drop-in center is a new part of the ministry. So in the last few months or so, the total number of bodies in the King's Embrace has basically doubled.
Yeah.
And so now in the facility, they have two large dormitories that house about 40 boys each. And so you think about, you know, if you had less than 40 boys, now you've got two dormitories to supervise and two sets of bathrooms and things like that. So there's a lot of just new things to discover, right?
Yeah.
When your community and your demographic is changing. And for me, you know, all of the boys were new. So I couldn't tell, you know, who had been there for a few years and who was brand new.
You got no idea. Yeah.
You know, Linda and David were still learning the names of the new boys because it's only been a few months. But I, you know, from my perspective, didn't see any sort of, you know, the TKE boys sit over here and the boys from the other nonprofits sat over there. I mean, it really just, everybody kind of has connected well.
Yeah.
And so that was a really beautiful thing to see that.
Yeah. This other nonprofit closed for
just, it's a more complicated story than I would like to go into on the podcast.
That's fine. That's perfectly fine.
Yes.
Yeah.
The boys are in good hands,
that's
right?
And wonderful news. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So 70 plus boys, how many staff are managing this?
So we have David, who's the general manager. His brother, George, is the director of ministry. So he takes the lead on worship.
Okay.
So we can talk about worship in a little bit.
Sure.
Then it's kind of a family run business, which is really interesting. I mean, like you find a strong family and then all of their roles take part. So George and David's mom, Beatrice, is in charge of the kitchen, and her daughter-in-law, Sheesh, is helps in the kitchen. And then there's another sibling who helps as well. And then John is Beatrice's husband who runs the farm. So it's, so they're all sort of connected in different ways. And Linda was explaining to me that in order to like legally house so many boys on site, you have to have a number of adults that are constantly living on campus. So a number of those staff people live full time at the King's Embrace so that you have appropriate, you know, adult to child ratios and things like that.
Yeah.
So I don't remember off the top of my head. I mean, I can
The
count, but
it's a healthy staff though.
I'd say there's around 10.
Okay.
Yeah. Between the King's Embrace campus itself, and then there's two staff over at the drop-in center.
So you mentioned worship, and I want to come back to that in a minute, but the King's Embrace is a ministry, right? This is not just this is not a public run orphanage situation.
No.
Right. It was started by people who are of faith.
Correct.
And you were mentioned before the podcast that even just the name kind of has a story behind it. So tell us a little bit about how they landed on the name, the King's Embrace. Cause that's doesn't necessarily ring like, oh, that means Jesus. Like, you know, what do we get from that?
Yeah. Yeah. So, so the Fishers, when they were, you know, wanting to come up with a name, were really drawn to the story in Matthew 25, about, whatever you do to the least of these, you do to me. And so, that verse is sort of their, grounding, right? And that reminder of, you know, when we extend our hands out and care for those who have less than or are neglected by the community, right? Like, when we recognize God's face in them, when we embrace them, mm-hmm. We are embracing God.
Yeah.
God's self, right? Yeah. As well. And so that is sort of their grounding verse, and has been really, is something that they've been wrestling with a lot too, in that with having so many boys, you know, now kind of the question becomes, would the King's Embrace like to have a school for these boys sure. themselves, right? Rather than having them go out to all these different
yeah.
places, right?
A school where they could actually make sure that they were open every day and yeah. the boys didn't have to walk just to come home. And,
yeah, and sure. and the really shocking thing is, I mean, the boys in primary school leave at 6:30 in the morning
mm-hmm.
and then they come home for lunch. They walk home for lunch and they go back. And then they don't come home until 4:30, 5 o'clock. I mean, and then they go to school on Saturdays, and some of the boys in high school go to school on Sundays. Wow. So, I mean, you think about, you know, kids in the U.S. I mean, I grew up, I had after school activities. I had mm-hmm. swim meets on the weekends, but I wasn't in a classroom
yeah.
7
yeah.
days a week. And so part of the wrestling has been, you know, these boys, like, they're not getting to be kids. Like, when are their brains resting? And so sure. this question has been, you know, what would it look like to start a school? And so mm-hmm. this, that verse is kind of what they're continuing to come back to, is like, what are the ways in which we can be caring for these boys, right? Yeah. If that's our goal, is to be giving them God's grace and God's love and God's care and God's rest, mm-hmm. right? How can we do that in a way that supports them? And wrestling with, like, if we have 27 boys in primary school and we pull them out of primary school, right, that will have an impact on the community. Sure. And, you know, the less kids you have enrolled, the less teachers get paid. And, you know, there's all sorts of yeah. dynamics. And so a big part of what I was doing and what my trip mates were doing is we were going to different schools in the area, public schools, private schools, and then another ministry that was started by a Baptist couple from McKinney, Texas, actually, and kind of observing different models of school and what okay. that looks like and things like that. Just really beginning to entertain, you know, how is God calling us to continue to fulfill this mission, you know, and to serve, you know, these former street boys
yeah.
And also to be aware of the relationship that we have with the wider community.
Sure.
So
yeah.
really big questions to kind of be yeah. jumping into, you Absolutely. Know, for a first time to get to know
a
nonprofit.
But jet lagged and in a new place yeah. where I don't understand the language, and now I'm exploring the
Yeah. Well, and it was interesting. I, you know, I got there and I thought, you know, people had told me that folks speak English here. Okay. And so I thought, yeah. you know, there wouldn't be any communication barriers. But when you think about, you know, these former street boys have been living on the street.
Yeah.
Like, they haven't been going to
no
school. They haven't
English,
been taking
yeah.
English classes.
Yeah.
So the older boys are translating for the younger boys, mm-hmm. you know, what I'm saying in English, or they're, you know, repeating in English what the boys have said in Swahili to mm-hmm. me. And so that was an interesting experience to, yeah. yeah, to see that. Because my experience when I lived in Argentina was anybody my age or younger was bilingual, mm. but it was the older population that
sure.
Hadn't yeah. learned, you know,
yeah, yeah.
English or another language. Yeah. So
interesting. So King's Embrace, what I love about that name as you're describing that is that the embrace, right? When you kind of first hear that, you think about, oh, these kids are being welcomed into the King's Embrace, right? They're being welcomed into like
sure.
a literal housing and
sure.
all these
yeah.
things, and they're being perhaps welcomed into God's embrace. But it's really, you know, based on that verse and what you're saying and kind of the vision that the founders had is
yeah.
that in welcoming them in, we, the ones who are coming to help, are being embraced by the King, right?
Yeah.
Like that these boys are the face of God that we're getting yeah. to witness. And so we're getting to embrace that as well. I think that's a really
yeah.
lovely way to remind ourselves that we don't do this work thinking that we're bringing Jesus to the boys, but
right.
that Jesus is already there and we're getting to meet Jesus
yeah.
in these boys. Yeah.
Yeah. And the Fishers are pretty clear about, like, they're not having, you know, have you been saved by Jesus conversations
sure. I mean,
with the boys, right?
They started by a Lutheran
yeah,
couple,
yeah.
right?
So yeah. this couple, yeah. So they used to be
Lutheran,
they
yeah.
used to be members of Tree of Life, and now they live in Kentucky. But
yeah.
I mean, like, are both active. They were at Lord of Life on Christmas Eve, you know,
oh,
worshiping
wow.
with Amy and Macy, right? So
I probably met them and forgot.
Yeah,
sorry.
Probably, yeah. It's okay.
Apologies to
there. And so, you know what I mean? Like, I see them being the hands and feet and heart of God and
sure.
everything that they
yeah,
do,
yeah.
and they are absolutely sharing the gospel, right?
Yeah.
And at the same time, not sitting every boy down and saying, you have to say the Jesus prayer in order to be a TKE boy,
right?
right?
Yeah.
Or things like that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, so the opportunity is there for them to, for the boys to experience the love of Christ.
Yeah.
And for that to become something that the Spirit of God just works in them.
Yeah.
And, yeah,
that's and one of the lovely. Most special things for me was on Sunday, we had worship. And so the boys lead worship on their own. Okay. George, the director of ministry, helps put it together. He is an audible musician, so he learns by hearing. So he can play piano and guitar, and he's taught a number of the boys to play different instruments. So there's a little band, a little TKE band. Yeah. And then there's a number of boys each week that recite memory verses, so Bible verses that they've learned, which is something that they do in the schools as well. It's pretty common.
Yeah.
And then one of the boys preaches.
Wow.
And so, when I was there on a Sunday, Richard, who is an eighth grader, gave a sermon about, forgiveness. And so it was really amazing to like be sitting in the midst of 50 something boys in this like game room in their dormitory where we had an entire worship service that was led by the boys, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought about, you know, what if I had been one of those little second grade boys, because there's five boys in second grade, you know, and I was looking and I saw Richard preaching, right? Or what if I was an older boy and I, you know, and a number of them brought Bibles to worship and they, you know, Richard would say, we're going to go to Ephesians, whatever, and read this verse. And so they're all flipping in their Bibles and whoever gets there first gets to read the verse out loud.
Yeah,
and it's
nice,
kind of a race,
yeah.
you know? And I mean, it was just absolutely fascinating to see, like, even just being in the midst of that type of environment, right? For worship and for learning, can have such an impactful difference, right?
Yeah,
on your on your journey, right? Like that idea of like faith is caught, not taught. I mean, being in the midst of people embodying their faith, right? And proclaiming their faith in the safety of this community, right? Where you might mess up and you might say a verse and chapter backwards, but you're held in this community of people who love you and are with you every day. So that was a really special experience. You know,
that's really beautiful.
Yeah.
Did it feel like a Lutheran worship, or it felt very kind of just different in that it was authentic to the boys' experience? I guess.
Yeah, we didn't do communion, and I asked kind of about, you know, have we done communion here before? And it's not super, you know, communion and baptism are not, you know, sacramentally, you know, part of their worship, but it does have kind of similar pieces. You know, there was a general greeting, and there's an invitation to prayer at the beginning, and there's a song, and then you've got the reading of scripture with the sermon, and then the memory verses and the prayers at the end. So, I mean, it follows our general liturgy a little bit with kind of that gathering word meal, not so much, but then sending pieces. But it also was very unique to their community and their, and their demographic. And it was only like, I think it was an hour 15, maybe closer to an hour and a half, but it wasn't like a super long, you know, kind of worship service. I didn't know what to expect, if it would be really short, if it would be really long, if we'd sing for 45 minutes and then have a sermon and sing for another 45 minutes, or kind of what it would be. So,
Well, I mean, even to have an hour and 15 minute long service with, you know, second graders through high school boys, right? Like, that's not what we do here. Like,
yeah.
I mean, that in itself.
Yeah.
Is a very
I did notice
experience.
Too, cause the boys are very sweet, and you know, they knew that I was a pastor, and so they asked me to sit in the front, and I was like, oh my gosh, thank you, but I'm used to sitting in the front during service, I guess.
Right,
but so I could see the clock, and there was a little boy who left to go to the bathroom, and that was like 45 or 50 minutes in. I'm like, wow, this is great. Like, these kids are, you know, it's not like you're 10 minutes in and you've got boys that are
sneaking off,
right?
Yeah,
I mean, they're really engaged, and the older boys are helping the younger boys find their passages and things like that. So it was pretty special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An incredible story. Well, we could certainly continue to listen to this. I'm sure you've got stories for days.
I do. Yeah. Stay tuned for a while.
Yeah. Who knows what other opportunities come. And it sounds like this will be something that Lord of Life will be kind of taking up and considering. What is a possible partnership with the King's Embrace look like? Is this something where we're as a congregation feeling called to partner with this clearly valuable and meaningful ministry? And so maybe there'll be other opportunities for this conversation in the future.
Yeah.
Who knows? You're back for like, what, it's been 4 days now that you've been
back
in the country?
Yeah, less than a week, certainly.
Yeah, less than a week. So,
yeah.
You know, we maybe haven't fully processed the experience yet, but we're certainly thankful for you coming on and sharing your experience.
Well, I'm grateful for the opportunity. So, Lord of Life, you know, gives me a continuing ed budget. And so
there you go.
I was able to fly there because Lord of Life paid for my two airplanes there and back. So I'm very grateful to have been able to go. And
well, we're certainly happy to put that to good use. And thanks to Patrick for being sick so that we could have this conversation. Yeah. So there we
thanks,
go.
Thanks, Patrick. Feel better.
Take your time. That's who knows what other great conversations we can have when Patrick's sick. We can find all sorts of things. Well, as always, friends, if you want to know more about the King's Embrace, is there a place they can go? Website?
Yeah,
or?
Their website is thekingsembrace.org.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's just like it sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, kingsembrace.org. Like excellent. Or you can, of course, email us at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com and let us know your question, and we can get that on to Pastor Cassandra. Where you can also, of course, go find all these episodes. You can hear about other trips that we've taken in the past or other things that Lord of Life is doing, or just the experience that Beyond Sunday's been having. You can find that all at beyondsundaypodcast.com. And then Patrick usually says something about have a great week or something like that. So you want to do that part?
Happy Lent, everyone.
There you go. Happy Lent.